What's up, everybody? Welcome to The Real Rundown. I'm here with Scott. I'm here with Pedro. What's up, guys?
The final countdown.
Final countdown. I'm your host, Bruno. Scott, you're wondering, you're looking around like you're trying to find the magic button. What's going on?
There was this countdown that came up. I felt like this pressure of that someone was going to happen. And then we just started.
Yeah, I was going to start the show.
I know, but it just, I'm not used to having this big countdown in front of my face. But I'm ready.
We're ready. Today we're going to talk about a couple of Super Bowl movie trailers that dropped. We're going to talk about a couple of the things that we've seen in and out of the news and some shows in between. And then the main topic for today is going to be a new show, a new docuseries on Paramount Plus called Cyber Sleuths, The Murder of Idaho. Something like that, right? Cyber Sleuths, The Murder.
The Idaho Murders.
The Idaho Murders. Yeah. Really interesting docuseries that kind of, Pedro, you said the trailer for that kind of caught our eye.
Yeah, it popped up on my Paramount homepage, and I think I took a quick look. I don't even think they had a trailer. I just read the description real quick, and I've been interested in learning more about this case because I wasn't following it when it first came out. And then the spin on it with all the craziness that went on during that time was enough to make me view it.
Yeah, so we'll dive into that, explain what a cyber sleuth is. I had no idea. Let's kick off with, I don't know if you guys saw the Super Bowl. I sent you guys some links to some of the trailers that dropped. I prefer to watch the trailers on YouTube the next day anyway. Anything stand out? Deadpool and Wolverine was the main one.
Yeah, I guess the big surprise was Wolverine at the end, right? Everyone thought it was just going to be the third installment of a Deadpool movie.
Yeah, I mean, there's been like those leaked press photos from that show the characters side by side. But those are just like set photos. They're not finished scenes or anything. I thought it was good. I don't really know what the plot is. It feels like Wolverine and Deadpool have both been either captured or brought to some, I only saw the trailer once, so some facility. They're fighting some like generic looking bad guys, and then they,
yes, yeah, same here. I didn't know what to think of it, so I don't really have an opinion on it.
They do tie directly to the Marvel universe now. They sort of speak directly to that, and it is a Marvel production now. Am I excited for that?
Fox? It was a Fox
production? It was a Fox movie, yeah. Maybe it still is, I don't know. I'm kind of looking forward to it more than I was before, though, for some reason. I don't really know why. I think the humor reminded me of kind of one of the things that made these movies unique. He's constantly breaking the fourth wall. And the writing is usually pretty clever. So I'm here for it. Scott? Scott doesn't give a F.
I don't know. I think maybe I'll be that guy who stands at the back of the theater and just like happen to walk in and go, all right, maybe I'll stay, but I don't know.
Are you sneaking into a movie in this scenario?
It was a hypothetical.
Maybe I'll stay.
It was a hypothetical. You know, if you go to a movie theater and you know the movie you're gonna see, you know, doesn't start yet, you go, oh, let me see what this is like, and you just happen. Okay. But no, we're in the land of hypotheticals. So maybe when it's on streaming, I'll maybe watch it, but I'm not gonna run to watch it the first day or the premiere night.
I might watch it. I'll probably watch it in theaters because I want to be part of that early conversation.
And when then is this releasing?
I don't know. May, June, perhaps? Summertime?
That sounds about right.
Yeah. I think all of these are kind of like May, June releases. So there's also the new Planet of the Apes, Twisters, and then Wicked, which I didn't know Wicked was being made into a film until today. Planet of the Apes looks pretty good, man. They're bringing the humans. Those humans have a bigger, well, the humans now have a, I don't want to say they have a bigger role, but they have a different role other than being the antagonists. They're the ones that are kind of like the apes now in this like reverse world movie.
Yeah, the humans are kind of closer to what they were in the original movies where they're you know, they're the captive ones.
Yeah, and there's like one girl who apparently has a brain, and she's smarter than the other humans. And I guess, honestly, man, we got to do a recap of this series because I don't know any of the characters, but like that main ape from the previous three films, he kind of is protective of the humans, and then there's another guy who's not, and then that's basically the whole plot.
If it means anything, Planet of the Apes, as we're recording this, is rated number 2 on YouTube as the
most watched,
as trending. Planet of the Apes is currently trending as 14 at the moment. So,
what does that 2 mean?
Well, let's see. I thought, you know what it was?
Algorithm broke Scott.
Hold on. No, 2. You know what? It was loading on my computer. The 2 represents that the video was uploaded 2 days ago because it said. So yeah, it's currently 14.
What's trending number 1? Just curious.
Let's see. Talk right now, and I'll look it up.
What can be more popular than Planet of the Apes? Although the Super Bowl was 2 days ago, so I'm sure it was higher.
Deadpool and Wolverine is the highest viewed trailer of all time on YouTube, apparently.
What?
All right. This is what I thought. It's the Usher's Apple Music Super Bowl halftime show is number 1. That's what I thought.
Interesting. People are rewatching that. The Twisters trailer. Did this hit?
Horrible.
Terrible. Okay.
This trailer, as I'm watching this trailer, I'm thinking in my head, I'd rather just watch the original.
It's almost the exact same thing, except the tornadoes are bigger and they're kind of like making monsters, evil monster sound effects now. I don't know if you picked that up. It's almost like they're growling.
And then it also like makes you remember like, oh yeah, there's a Twister movie that was really good in the 90s. I should watch that.
Yeah. They even have, I don't know if you remember that little bucket of like silver balls that flies up. They have that in this movie too, from the first one. It's like their special weapon at the end. It's like what they use to track, to get all their data. It's the little balls. They use them again in this one. I don't know why. I bet you like the tornado, there's like some big bad ultimate tornado at the end with like a finishing move or something.
I don't know. I thought the Twister's effects looked too fake. So I'm like, what is this? It's like a commercial for like the Weather Channel Storm Chasers or something. And it's like a dramatic representation and they're like Twisters.
They probably borrowed their VFX team.
Wow.
Those guys have a high production value. If you haven't noticed, their YouTube channel is insane.
Yes, it's almost like a joke. It's like, are you going to tell us the weather, or are you just going to stand in the middle of a street that's has water going up 5 feet tall, and you're just standing inside of it like water just parted its ways around you as a circle so you can stand there?
It's like also, a destruction porn.
They also bomb you with ads on any of the Weather Channel app or platforms. It's like 90% ads and pop-ups.
Like, this rainstorm is brought to you by MyPillow.
It makes you double think when you're like on their platform. Like, am I on the right website, or is this like a spoofing site or something?
It's because you're not paying for their services. They're giving you the weather and you're not paying anything, so they gotta throw something at you to make some few pennies.
It's too much.
There's alternative weather channels on YouTube now that are way better than anything.
You gotta share your sources.
Name one.
I don't remember the name of the guy, but there's one guy that's like incredible.
I guess we can edit.
He's like the YouTube weather guy. Just look it up. Like, just look.
That's
up,
a thing. The YouTube weather guy. There's always a thing.
Nah, this guy's got like the same software that they use and everything. He's got like a team of reporters on the street and everything, but he broadcasts live from his
his
house, like from his house. Yeah.
Does he do it live, or does he put up a video?
No, he's live.
And
he's live. You go, look, go on YouTube right now. Hold on,
listeners, go on YouTube right now.
Go on YouTube right now. I'm just gonna type weather. I'm just going to type weather, and he's probably going to be the
first. Weather. Okay, or here we go. I'm getting like...
What's the first result?
What's the first result? What's the name of the channel? Hold on.
You guys might get different results because...
Right.
You know.
But I'm getting New York City snow.
That's not the guy. Pedro, what do you got?
Top stories.
There's like a bunch of weather channels on there. Ryan Hall, y'all.
Okay.
Ryan Hall, y'all.
Now, when you open up YouTube, does the algorithm push all these weather videos because you've looked them up? So that's all you see?
No. My algorithm is clean. I like delete my cookies and my watch list and all that crap.
Damn, you start from scratch every time?
Not every time, but every once in a
while. You got to play that song feels like the first time because it's squeaky clean.
Anyway.
What about the Wicked trailer?
I didn't really care for that.
That's what I thought.
I thought it was interesting.
Wait, was it interesting? Is that because you're not familiar with the Wicked play storyline? Because it focuses on the witch.
So I thought that's an interesting angle.
But it's from the Broadway show.
Yeah, I didn't know it was based on the Broadway show. So,
okay.
And I know that was good. So, it should be interesting to see the movie adaptation of it.
Yeah, I might skip it, but it might be a TV thing. Well, that's one of those where like randomly my wife will just be like, "We should go watch Wicked. It comes out next Tuesday." I'm like, "What?"
Is that actually a theater release or a Disney Plus release?
I think it's a theater release. I think Disney. Well, is this a Disney property? I don't even know. It's most likely a theater release.
Okay. The first thing I assumed is it's a Disney property for some reason because it just has that look.
Might be Universal.
Well, the movie is... It was a Warner film.
Okay.
It's a Universal. Sorry. It's Universal. It's Universal.
Ah, yeah. Okay.
But I know The Wizard of Oz was owned by Warner Media. Because it was constantly on, you know, Turner, you know, TNT and all that. This is done by Universal. Wicked.
So, yeah, I expect that to be in theater. I didn't see the release date, but I would...
Thanksgiving.
Think in the fall.
Thanksgiving.
Yep. Okay.
Wow, they're announcing it now and it's all the way at the...
Everyone was waiting. All these people...
9 months from
now. All these theater enthusiasts were waiting for it. They knew that Ariana Grande and Cynthia Erivo was going to be in it. And there it is.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, that's
Universal probably had like that $80 million saved up for a Super Bowl spot. And then they're like, what should we do with this money? Fuck it. Throw Wicked.
I think it was delayed because of the pandemic.
Against stuff is still delayed because of the pandemic.
Well, they had to shoot it.
It's starting to feel like an excuse.
They had to film the movie.
Oh, you mean the entire production?
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
All right. Should we start bashing on Amazon for like 5 minutes straight?
Pedro, go ahead. I'll give you. I'm gonna be back in 10 minutes. Go ahead.
I mean, I'm glad they're being sued. I doubt the lawsuit is gonna go anywhere. Or move any needles, but glad somebody did.
But what's the headline? Go ahead.
Yeah, let me give it some context. So a couple of weeks ago, Amazon increased the prices on their Prime platform by like $3 if you did not want to see advertisements, basically. So they hiked the price up by $3, which now makes it, you know what? I don't even know. They're constantly updating it, but it's a $3 price jump. They also, without sort of letting anyone know, they dropped the Dolby Atmos and Dolby Vision for those people who did not upgrade, and that led to ultimately somebody just suing them.
I believe the cost of Amazon Prime is $139 per year, $14.99 per month. And if you only want that, for those few people who just want the Prime Video membership, you can get it for $8.99.
What is it now, though, with this new tier, this non-commercial tier?
The non-commercial? This is just what I see on Amazon. Because
I think it's $139. Just it's been like that for a few months now.
Yeah, I don't know if it's like because you can get it. the movie app as its own thing. I don't know if they just add $3 per month to the annual overall Amazon subscription. I don't know how it's being handling price-wise. I should check my... well, no, because I didn't opt in for the... So I guess I'm going to start seeing ads. I haven't watched Amazon in a while.
But this Dolby Atmos and Vision thing, that was just like out of the blue, a cold... Like cold?
They pulled the plug.
Telling anybody?
Yeah, they kind of pulled the plug. Apparently somebody in like Europe somewhere noticed it. That's how I got the news.
The one person that has like all those features on their TV.
That ill setup.
I got... My TV isn't even that old. It's like 4 years old from 2020, and I don't have those things.
But how cool is it that Amazon was just giving you that? You know? Like, oh, if you have a TV or a speaker system that's capable, they supported it. Like, yeah, that's pretty cool.
So does Netflix, and I think...
They support the Dolby Vision now?
Max. Yeah, I think Max.
I think Max... But I don't think...
Everyone has, like... If your TV is, like, the latest, greatest thing, you're seeing these streaming platforms different than everyone else.
I think even Max, there was a certain point when they went from HBO Max to Max, they were then saying, we're going to preview you to be able to get Max, and then we're going to remove the 4K quality if you have the ad version, and they're also going to remove the audio quality. But I still see it appear in my account, and I have the ad version. But I'm looking at the Prime costs since it launched. So up until 2014, it was $79, then in 2018, and then jumped to $99. Then in 2022, it was at $119. And then to date, it looks like it's $139. So it's doubled.
So it went from $79.99 in 2014 to $140.
It's almost doubled.
Almost double in price.
In 10 years.
Higher than inflation.
In 10 years.
And you canceled, right, Pedro?
Yeah, I'm off that. I think the big issue and the big talking point is if you offer something for free without charging your customers for it, you shouldn't turn around and then charge people for something that there was no charge for. That's the problem.
Yeah, that's part of the lawsuit, actually, I think, right?
Well, they didn't tell anyone, I guess. Well, they didn't... It doesn't really... It's just odd. But I can live with having one or two
it's
ads.
It's like if you charged for something before and then increased the price, all you're doing is increasing the price. This time you're taking away what you were giving, what was included when people signed up for something, and then making them pay for it. That's a problem. Because if you don't put a stop to this, then where's it going to end, you know?
If they just...
It's just every platform is just going to start coming out and stripping things. And I mean, if you strip 4K, that's kind of redundant because... Almost everyone has a 4K TV now. You know, it's like standard with TVs. You take that off, and what are you giving people, like DVD quality streams again?
I don't really know if people really see 4K to the full max because people's bandwidth on their internet connection only can handle so much. So I was watching...
Yeah, you don't.
So I was watching on my... online streaming TV subscription, there's 4K sports, but the 4K sports actually looks worse than the HD because it's so compressed and it's at higher resolution that it's like watching particles come together. But I think that
honestly, I don't have an incredible internet connection, and everything I streams in 4K just fine.
But it's probably really compressed.
Yeah, because I threw in...
Yeah, but you're never
with buffering.
You're never going to get full 4K unless you're watching a 4K Blu-ray disc.
Exactly. Well, that's where the... I was actually having a conversation with my brother about this. We were just talking about TVs in general. And it led to basically that. Like, it doesn't matter what... Like, your TV can be 4K or 8K, and the service provider can tell you that they'll stream at 4K, and I'm sure they will, but it's still dependent on that signal, on that internet connection. When I threw in a 4K Blu-ray last week to watch Dunkirk, the menu alone, just on the menu screen, I was blown away by the quality. It's not even close. So there is a difference, and I think because we're all streaming now, and we're all used to this internet connection to get our video feeds, we're just used to a lower quality. So the whole conversation about that was happening like 10 years ago about constantly like new TV, new player, new this, just to constantly chase that quality. No one's talking about the quality of anything anymore, right? Because everything has kind of gotten compressed in terms of the signal that you get.
Our eyes have also gotten used to it too.
Right.
You pop in a DVD and you're like, what the hell is this?
Yeah, looks phenomenal.
But the 4K that everyone understands as 4K is the compressed streaming 4K.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's not a problem. It's still 4K. That, you know, they're not lying when they're telling you they're giving you 4K. But if they want to start taking that away now, that's a huge problem, because it's like 4K is the standard now, you know. Every single TV streams 4K. Even if your connection isn't great, you're still getting 4K. You're just getting, you know, the compressed version that they're sending through for it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think Netflix, actually, the highest Netflix subscription is 4K, but the lower one, I think, only gives you 1080p. I think. Pretty sure that's
it used to be.
And it's not, yeah. It's not everyone. It's a small percentage of people that, you know, are getting all these features, are actually streaming all these features. So why would you want to take that away when it's like not even everyone that's using it, you know? Very few people are getting 4K Dolby Vision, Dolby Atmos streamed through Amazon Prime for, you know, whatever Lord of the Rings series they're watching.
People are watching.
Very few people.
They're watching on their cell phones in 480p, and they don't even know that they're doing that because their phone is not big enough for it to even see 1080 or 4K.
Yeah. So why punish the freaking 3% of people that are out here getting all that quality? They already invested in a great entertainment system. You're going to make them pay premium price now to use what they have?
What they'll say to that is that these extra $3 per month from these millions of people are going to help fund productions of films and shows and acquisitions of IPs. You know, that's what they'll say, and I'm sure that's true. But Amazon is already like the top five wealthiest company on the planet. You know, I'm sure they operate differently with the Prime division, the studio division, or whatever, operates separately from the delivery, whatever. There are multiple businesses. But
I think we would agree most people have Amazon not for their video streaming services. They have it because they want to buy things and they want it to come fast. They want it to come either same day, same hour, or within 2 days of you ordering it. But on Netflix, their prices range from currently rounding up $7 for standard with ads, all the way up to premium, which is $22.99. And even when you look at the premium breakdown, it says it you can watch Ultra HD. So they're using their own lingo. It's not necessarily 4K. It's Ultra HD.
Yeah, it's just a higher HD resolution. Yeah, and look, the prices are going to continue to go up as these services consolidate. And I think that's just the way it's going to be. Ultimately, a lot of these things are going to go away, and it's going to be, you know, the tech giants now, Amazon and Apple, and, you know, Netflix, I guess, is part of that. And then the actual networks, traditional networks, are going to have to figure out their own bundle. One of the worst parts
about it is you can't get grandfathered in like with cell phone companies. You know, you can't just stay on the plan that you were and get what you paid for. Now it's like you get less for what you paid for.
Yeah, there's no contract.
At least cell phone companies switch it up on on new customers, new subscribers. But this, they're just like backpedaling it to everyone.
But to confuse people even more, that now, did you hear what they was announced a week or ago?
Did you hear this?
Did you hear this? That ESPN, Fox, Warner Brothers are going to launch their own sports streaming platform. But the issue I have with this, it's going back to the tradition, still leaning on those traditional cable channels, because it's all packed together with linear networks, like ESPN, ESPN Plus, ESPN2. I had to hold my breath. ESPNU, SEC Network, ACC Network, ESPN News, ABC, Fox, FS1, FSM12, Big Ten Network, TNT, TBS, two networks. It's like,
yeah, this is wild.
This is good.
People cord cut it for a reason. They didn't want to go, oh, we want to have a subscription service to bring back these channels that we didn't necessarily watch.
No, but here's the thing. Live television is alive mainly because of sports. So when you create all of these different apps that you need to open and log into to watch the Knicks, and then another one to watch NFL on Sunday, and then another one to watch the different NFL game on Sunday, and then the Champions League, and then all of these, it's annoying, and it adds up, and you're constantly jumping around. You know, every time the new sport season is on, you have to get another app. So I'm okay with this. I think this makes sense because sports is something that people want to watch and sort of channel surf through, jump back and forth between games without opening different apps or services.
But you still will. What you're saying is not, that problem is not going to be solved, because you still have the orphaned out, CBS, NBC, the regional sports channels, like you mentioned the Knicks. I believe the Knicks are on.
Some of them are out. MSG. Yeah, yeah. No, I get that.
Although, so if you, because they say that you can watch the NFL, NBA, MLB, NHL, WNBA, NASCAR, and college sports.
Don't list that. Them all.
All that.
I still think it's a good idea. And a lot of this is going to come down to like the price.
The price, it's yes. Good or bad.
So depending on the cost.
That's my big concern. I applaud that it's being tried. You know, no one's tried this before.
They did. Remember the 90s cable television?
Some
cable television still exists.
Almost all the sports, right? Into one app where you pay one monthly price and you get access to all these different sports from all these different networks.
Yeah, I think
the first thing that came to my mind when reading about this is this sounds expensive.
Yes.
Because if right now you try to watch all these things that are listed separately, you would be paying for like five or six different apps, right?
You can get all these. You can get all these channels, and there may be one or two that you can't. The YouTube TV subscription is $72.99 per month. Now, it has to be less. This package that they're going to create has to be less, because why would someone subscribe to this grouping if you can get all the channels, if not more, by just subscribing to Hulu TV or YouTube TV or any other? Or isn't there Fubo? Why can't you subscribe to that?
Because that is a bundle with not only sports, but tons of other channels. This is going to be solely sports, so it's going to cut out all of those other channels, which would just bring on costs.
But it has to be less than $72, I think, or at least to make it worth it.
I'm sure it will. Like, they're gonna want to be competitive, but you also got to remember Disney Plus is still its own app, and so is like ESPN and that stuff. So those, they're still gonna be making money from those main apps. This is just an additional for people who don't want to subscribe for all of that stuff. So we'll see. Yeah, I think it's gonna come down really to cost.
I'm really interested in sort of like the negotiations and stuff behind it. Like, I hope like an article comes out or something about how they managed to get all these executives to agree on this, because just TV rights alone for just like the NFL alone is worth billions of dollars, you know, that CBS pays to be the only place that you can watch it, you know? I mean, I'd love to read a deep dive on how they pulled this off, because it's... must have been a lot of like egos and a lot of powerful people in the room, you know, agreeing to one thing, which is
rare. Well, it's because there's a whole audience that no longer exists. Because if you don't have cable TV, you're not going to be watching any of these chat, at least 15 linear networks. You're going to, there's no way for you to be able to watch FS1 or Fox or any of those to be able to watch a sporting event. You'll probably go to a bar or someone's household, but you don't, it would hopefully raise the ratings because as far as the Super Bowl, they're saying it was the most watched Super Bowl. That's because it was on more different destinations, particularly in the US. It was on Nickelodeon. It was on streaming on Paramount Plus. It was on CBS.
Most watched program of all time, right? Not just
Super Bowl. No, that's the just the CBS broadcast. That's not including the Paramount stream or anything else. One note I just want to mention, NBC is not part of this deal. And they have the rights to the Olympics, which are coming up, and they have the rights to the Premier League. So
I think they also have the NBA Finals, right? Or playoffs?
That's ABC, which I think... The Finals is ABC.
Okay.
ESPN has the playoffs. So, yeah, we'll see how this plays out. It was just an announcement that it's going to be coming out. I don't even know if they had put a date on it.
It's going to be for the fall.
Okay, it'll be for the fall. Yeah, looking forward to it. The World Cup's coming up in the U.S. in a couple of years, so it'll be. That's. I'm sure that's going to be on one of the major networks anyway. But more options.
My question is, what is cable? What are the cable television companies doing to stay relevant right now? Because they're like
talking about Spectrum.
They've been on a Spectrum slow decline. And with this, with all this stuff coming out and these mergers and stuff, like they're declining even more rapidly. Like, what can cable realistically do to, you know, stay relevant? All we know cable as is a cable provider, a cable box connected to your television.
Well, most cable providers, and Verizon Fios is also into that bucket as well. They're providing their own streaming devices that you can rent because they're providing you the internet. You still need the cable company, whether it's for telephone.
Yeah, it's the
you
same still need connection. It's a coaxial cable.
So they provide. So they're providing also a streaming box, so you can utilize their equipment to connect you to all these subscriptions that you could subscribe to through your cable company. So everything gets put on one bill instead of subscribing to each one individually, which makes it easier.
What I want to know is. How can they innovate? Like, what's next for them? How can they change to
stay? Well, that's also
If it's just you paying for a cable box to watch TV, you know, they're already on their deathbed. Like in a few years, that like they're just gonna be out of the game.
Well, they're offering cell phone service in addition, so they have. That's truthfully what it is.
That's something. That's something. Like, what can they? What else can they offer you?
Over the past 4 years, they've been offering cell phone service, so you can get the quad play versus the triple play if you really want all the services.
Yeah, I think that business model is either going to expire or change somehow because the audience is sort of expiring and changing. I don't know. That's a good question. I really don't know what's going to happen with that. I think live TV is still important.
For sports.
Some degree. Yeah, for sports. And it's always like...
Sports and news.
Sports and news. But there's something to coming home and just like turning on the TV and just leaving it. You know, other than you turning home, turning on TV, finding an app, searching for something to put on. You know, the idea of coming on just like throw... I do that with YouTube. I'll come home... If I just want background noise, I'll just throw it on one of the YouTube channels I subscribe to or like a playlist or something. And that's because that old habit of just like having some background noise. You can't do that with Netflix or Max because you have to sit there and find something. But, you know, and that's not to say that that's going to by any means save cable. But, something's, you know, I don't know. It's a good question. All right, let's go on to main topic. Let's jump on to main topic. Today we're going to talk about
cyber sleuths.
Cyber sleuths. Let me drop a quick intro for this thing. So, Pedro, as we said earlier, you sort of dropped this trailer in our chat. I had never heard of this. I would probably never hear about this. But Cyber Sleuth is a docuseries. It focuses on the murder of four university kids from Idaho in 2022. They were stabbed in their dorm in Moscow, Idaho. So that case is actually still going on. They did make an arrest, but he hasn't been convicted yet. But the movie focuses on...
I believe he was convicted. It's just his trial hasn't...
Oh, really?
His trial isn't over yet. It's been delayed.
Okay. So what is the docuseries then? It's a docuseries about these internet sleuths. I didn't know what this term was. I never heard of it. But it's basically people who are online who try to solve old murders, traditionally old murders. But in the case of this movie, it's these TikTok folks who are actively engaged in the investigation and the breaking news and the day-to-day of this case as it happened in Idaho. And that's what the docuseries kind of focuses on, is not so much on the case itself, but the hysteria that these TikTokers create around it. I had never heard of the term cyber sleuth before, at least not to my memory. Is that something you guys were
familiar? I wasn't familiar with the term itself and to how deep some of these people are taking it. I am familiar with the fact that there's a huge like true crime community online, especially amongst young people, and it's become more popular and more popular in recent years as like Netflix and you know all these platforms have had true crime like documentary series. Especially cold cases and just stuff that's hard to explain and just really, you know, weird murder cases. A lot of people in recent years have gotten into this stuff. True crime community has just grown online a lot. And of course, when that happens, there's going to be people that take it to the next level and start, you know, getting hysterical about it and like trying to find clues and, you know, posting on social media what they think, starting group chats, starting communities online about to get other people involved who are interested in that's in a specific case to just drop their opinion, drop clues. And then these people took it a step further and are just like going out to the crime scenes, acting as reporters, acting as media, and doing their own investigations, and just becoming sort of these social media celebrities that people follow and turn to for this alternative like news reporting, more about specific cases. And in this case with the Idaho murders, it was kind of like the perfect storm because it happened in a small town. I think they said there were only like 27 like cops or something in the town, or just the police force was like capped at 26, 27 people. There was such little information that was being revealed to the public. There was a lot of talk about how this department was incapable of handling this type of case. This case was too big for them. It was just a perfect storm. With the lack of information coming out and all the questions the public had, people at some point were going to go and try to start solving this stuff themselves. There was a lot of anger at the police department for not being transparent and a lot of complaints that they just weren't really working the case the way it was supposed to be worked.
Yeah, okay, that was a lot. But yeah, a lot of that pretty much should give you the context you need to kind of follow along about regarding where this is kind of going. The first thing I want to jump on is the visual of the docuseries. So it relies heavily on TikTok videos every lower third, and that's a lower third is that when a person is named on screen, includes either their TikTok handle or Twitter handle, or there's that one guy who had a Facebook with like 200 friends. They list your followers or friends or subscribers next to your handle. And my man, who's like a retired detective, he was like, I forgot his name, but they put the Facebook thing on there. They said he had 265 friends. I respect that.
Well, they also had a native of Moscow, Idaho, some redneck looking guy in overalls.
Wait, I don't know how they got the neighbor.
Nah. Just like some straight up caricature guy with him, and then it said number of X followers 0. But he was some guy, like, I swear when he came on, I thought he was just like a comedic plant. I don't even know if this guy's real or not, but supposedly he's a native of the town.
Okay. Yeah, I thought go ahead, Scott.
I thought it was well done. It was done. I don't know if it needed to be 3 episodes. It felt like it could have been a 1 full length documentary. That there was you might have noticed there was a lot of footage from CBS News. For some odd reason, there was also footage from News Nation. I don't know why, but
a lot of News Nation.
Yeah. I don't know why, but of course it was CBS News because it was produced by Paramount Plus. So they encompassed their own material with guiding how it was being shown in the news and also behind the scenes footage of media camps in front of various places, including of the site of the murder that occurred. I thought it was interesting hearing Lydia Luciano's point of view because she covered the story for CBS News. So she was constantly bouncing back and forth of like, she was actually agreeing with wanting there to be more access. She was on the side.
Well, you're getting a little bit ahead. I feel you, but you're jumping a little bit ahead.
But to go back as far as the quality, I thought there was a balance of showing what it needed to look like as far as showing it as you're watching on TikTok, because you can't, because it's everything is vertical.
Well, and that's how most of the people see the world today, right? That's how they see the news and everything is through that format. So instead of just making it like a full screen vertical video, they kind of created these phones and backdrops and everything. And I thought stylistically it was well done. Not anything that we haven't seen before, but to rely so heavily on that format for a 3-hour documentary was, and not make it stale, I thought was really impressive.
Yeah, I agree. I thought it was really impressive that you can, you know, in this day and age, you can make a documentary and just have the narrative pushed forward through just social media content.
Yeah.
It's almost like you can make a documentary with 99% social media footage. And it just narrates itself, you know, you just...
Well, yeah, that was kind of the point, too, was letting that footage speak for itself. Absolutely, yeah. And then you incorporated some of the talking heads via interviews. Many of the TikTokers, or pretty much all of them, did provide interviews for the piece. I thought it was pretty cool. I thought the story was pretty cool. I had never heard of this murder, and it seems like it was a big deal, and somehow I missed it in 2022. Like, are you guys familiar with this story?
I'm familiar with it.
Yes.
I never looked into the details of it while it was breaking on the news. But I always knew that at some point they're going to make a ton of like content on this murder because it was so unique. And I always, in the back of my head, I'm just like, yeah, I'll just wait till that stuff comes out to get the full story.
Yeah, so basically what happened in 2022, these just like decent college kids, a couple, and then two best friends, I guess, they were just randomly murdered one night in this little town of Moscow, Idaho. It's like a college town. And then there's like some surveillance footage of them at a food truck. That was probably the last time that they were seen alive. And at the house, while they were murdered, there were also additional roommates in the house who apparently heard or did not hear or call the cops or did not call the cops. So it created this whole thing about, like, you know, who killed these people. The documentary focuses on the impact that these sleuths on TikTok have on the case. One of the underlying themes that the TikTokers put out is, like, you can't, and this is, you know, something that's very contemporary, is that you can't trust police or law enforcement, and you can't trust the media to get the real story. And so these guys are the ones that are going to get the real story. But they don't. I think I was trying to figure out what the documentary was trying to say about these kinds of people. And in the beginning, I think they're perceived as, like, kind of, they might know what they're talking about or what they're doing, or their takeaways might be, might have a point. But by the end of the, or not even by the end, like, as soon as, like, the police work starts being done, you realize these guys don't know what the hell. They have no idea what they're talking about. They're just kind of making it up as they go along. And I feel like they kind of just fall apart. And you realize they're just here to gossip at the end of the day. It's just gossip for the clicks.
Yeah, in this day and age where distrust of media and, like, government and stuff is rampant, they found the niche, you know? They found the slot where they fit, and that there's an audience for that, and they've run with it. I personally don't think, this is my personal opinion, I don't think they're horrible people. Some of them seem like they genuinely, you know, care about the cases. You know, they're communicating with the families, they're trying to get them closure, they're trying to help in any way they can. And obviously there's other people that are going to take advantage of this and just doing it for money and just to get be seen and stuff.
Yeah, I think so. That's a good point. So you're talking about someone named Olivia, her on TikTok, she's Chronicles of Olivia, and this other person, Bullhorn Betty, and they're kind of on the scene. They'll be reporting from, you know, where the police are, where the press are, where the house, where he was killed. I think Olivia at one point is got really close to one of the families, or the dads of one of the family members. And then you have other people, like that blonde Jenna Canella, I think her name was, and this other rando JLR, who used to be like an ex-scammer. And they're
That was surprising to learn his past that
on the third episode.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of satisfying to learn. I'm like, dude, he looks like a scumbag. So you have these two sides, like this one side who's just like, you know, conspiracy theory just from their house, from their sofa, right? They don't care. And then you have these other folks who are trying a little bit to be journalists, and they're definitely pretending to be journalists, and they're just on the scene and so there's like two approaches to this. But Scott, to your point, there was that CBS reporter giving it all a little bit of balance and sort of setting a different tone.
Because you said, I guess you were saying, I don't remember what you just said. I think you used the phrase pretending to be journalists.
Yeah.
But the definition of what a journalist is being modified by the public, because a journalist would be someone that would be either a writer or someone, a radio announcer who would just, doesn't matter what their personality would not get in the way of telling the story, which is still what broadcast news, some cable news, it doesn't matter what their personal life is, it doesn't get in the way. But with TikTok, both merge, because most people who are on TikTok, this is speaking from someone who doesn't use TikTok, most of the time people are watching people on social media because they get attached to the persona of the person that they're watching, not necessarily because of
right.
their background and experience, but you get to have this feeling that they have experience because they're, but there's not really any source checking of what they'll say. I have this, I found out this, but there's people's lives that are affected by what they say. So if they pinpoint the wrong person, it affects someone that they just called out. That's not true. Which also led to the police department having to create on a daily basis a whole section of their website to debunk anything that was factually inaccurate. And they had to update it on a daily basis, which, yes, the sleuths helped in a lot of ways, but it also distracted the police department from actually focusing on the case versus having to make sure that PR is accurate to the facts that are actually putting out there, because they were speaking for the police department. And when you have all these people speaking out, it's hard for them to focus on the work that they're trying to accomplish.
All right. Name one way the sleuths helped.
Well, they called out the gentleman. I don't remember his name. The gentleman that they're up at trial, they brought attention to him.
Kohlberger?
Yes.
They didn't even know this guy existed. They were thinking, they were like, the reason they created the rumor thing, yes, is you're right, it's because of these idiots over there on the bullhorn just saying anything, but they were pointing at the hoodie guy because they saw right. some guy in a white hoodie in a taco truck, and they were like, right. that's the killer.
Exactly.
And then they started targeting the neighbor who had absolutely nothing to do with it. And then when this Kroger guy got arrested, they had no idea. This guy was not even on the radar. They had no idea what they were talking
about. But there's people, you know, the police department can't solve cases on their own. That's why they rely on tips.
Of course they can.
No, they rely on tips.
They rely on tips.
They rely on tips. Right.
They don't rely on bullshit.
Right.
Conspiracy theories.
But that's the challenge of having people on TikTok, because they are vocally recording their perspective in tips, and it's going out to the masses.
I think one thing to remember is with journalism, the journalist is the background and the story is up front. With these cyber sleuths, it's more of their online personality is front and center.
Yeah, 100%.
And the story is background. And you just see that from some of these videos where it's just like a close-up of someone's face during a selfie, just talking and going crazy and throwing text.
With a map in the back.
Breaking all news graphics. Stuff, you know? And, you know, it's like, it makes you ask the question, you know, like, what do you guys think is are cyber, do cyber sleuths genuinely care, or are they just trying to, are they just over the top characters trying to get exposure?
I think they cared to, I think they start caring, but then, and I think they care, I think everyone at a certain point in journalism has their own ego that they want to get, they want to be the first to the story. They want to be the first to it. And I think that's what these cyber sleuths have, that same feeling, but they don't want to be held behind the barricade of having to work for a large media company or a large, you know, network. Because well,
these people,
and they're probably getting paid more than they would at a normal job as a correspondent or something, right?
Well, no, they're not. Because they're only,
these guys are barely making any money.
They're getting tons of people donating to them when they go live. Some of them were even saying that some of the platforms reached out to them to like promote a product or something.
But they're not making.
Yeah, yeah.
They're selling T-shirts. This guy JLR has.
Oh, poor
shirts.
JLR. No, those guys, they're making bare minimum. Trust me, yes. Those guys are not making a lot of money. I don't think they want to be journalists because that requires actual work. Like, they don't want to be a journalist.
This is how guys like Alex Jones and all these, you know, alternative news people got started. And, you know, that guy went on to become like a, you know, he was like a millionaire or something.
Yeah, but he started off as an actual, like, TV or radio personality. Like, yeah. That guy had real training. And not to say that these guys can't become stars, famous, rich, whatever their heart desires, but they're not journalists. And what they're doing is creating so much noise, and they forget that while they're here talking back and forth to their to each other and their audience, the police are actually doing the work. So when they get breaking news, what they're doing is following like a real episode of CSI Live. And every scene, when there's a new piece of evidence, they just react into that scene and say, no, I think the real killer is this guy. Like, they're not contributing anything.
They're just keeping content coming.
Yes.
And coming. Because that's what they rely on.
And they and what they said in the documentary, there's not really an advantage to them, sadly, for the case to be solved. Because if the case is solved, there's nothing more to talk about.
Exactly. Like, when they caught this guy, suddenly half of them are like, nah, he didn't do it.
Yeah, unless they disagree with what the outcome of the case is. Then it's like, you know, like, nah, well, I still don't think they got it right. This is all the evidence against that.
But it's like convincing a flat earther that when you finally convince them that it's not round, they're still not going to believe you, because then it makes everything else so meaningless and insignificant. You're taking away their purpose.
Well, if they have an opinion and they have certain things to back up their opinion, there's no end to this, you know? They'll just... It can just be one. It could be one point of view, or it could be the other one. And as long as you keep presenting things to back up your point of view, you know, you're...
It's endless until,
you're
like...
There. You're out there. It's endless. And, you know, anyone can agree with you.
People will, because they don't really trust anything.
Yeah. At the end of this, after watching this, I was kind of left thinking, should there be laws against cyber sleuthing? What do you guys think?
I don't think so. I still think people have the right to kind of use their voice and speak to their audience however they want, as long as they're not actively interrupting or intentionally, you know, messing with the case in any way. I think that's fine. It's not a pretty part of society by any means. There are a lot of other dark parts of our society, but I don't see this one as being all that hard.
Requiring laws.
These are all platforms that are expanding without any guidelines, because there are guidelines that any broadcast network has to follow. They have to follow the FCC. And cable somewhat, you know, follows that integrity somewhat as well. But it's up to the company of TikTok to go, all right, we are going to set guidelines and regulations of what content, because they're basically the network. So if they're...
Yeah, but they have regulations, Scott, just like networks, they have regulations on certain things. But the question is, do you think sleuthing should be regulated on TikTok or what?
Yes, I think that you should be, at a certain extent, if you're saying something that's factual and you think it's factual, you should provide a source to it. Whether it, you know, just like with Wikipedia, you can't put a sentence without, you know, a citation.
There was that one individual who's currently being sued by the professor because she claimed that this other person was the killer, and she gave her full name, where she works, her address. So she's suing. So that's why these guys also made it a point to constantly say, allegedly this, allegedly that. This is just my opinion, you know, for legal protection.
But if they say allegedly, you still would cite where the alleged statement is from.
Yeah, but it's just gossip. There's no source.
Right, which is why it goes to show how valuable and whether or not this should be something that people should be able to put out there, because it falls into entertainment. It's not informational. It's entertainment.
This is the issue that we're facing in society right now. And I want to quote the director in an article where she was interviewed, where she said, you know, this is the type of bite-sized information craving society we live in right now, where most people who have grown up on these social media platforms can't tell the difference between entertainment and news.
Yeah.
Or entertainment and reality. So it's just all a blur to them, you know? They can turn on like a legit source or read a newspaper and see someone on TikTok, you know, doing their own deep dive into it, and they're both equal to them. It's both on the same level of content to them.
Right. The information has the same value. And I think one of the sleuths actually said that. You know, they're constantly bashing mainstream media, obviously, but they actually said, why would someone watch, you know, an interview on television when they can just get everything here in 30 seconds, all the information?
Exactly.
But you can't. And you can't get all the information.
Yeah, and I mean, there's obviously something wrong with that, but it's sad, you know, that society has come to a point where, like, that's an option now. There's also, you know, of course, there's dangers and there's pros and cons to it, but one of the things they were trying to sort of hint at, it was this theory that the killer was actually on some of these social media channels, like putting in his two cents and chatting about it and learning how to not get caught, because they're just adapting to what evidence people know, like what's information is out there. So that's a whole nother thing, you know, like if it's an unsolved case and there's someone out there that's responsible for this stuff, they could just be keeping up with what's going on online and just, you know, adapting and learning and staying one step ahead of the police this way.
I think we're getting away from the point that these people online, they're just making things up. That's a conspiracy theory that they just threw out there, just like all the other ones they threw out there. It's baseless. And during the case, the police kept all the information very close to their chest. And people didn't like that because then they left them in the dark and they left them guessing. But so far, the police have not really misfired on this case. There's a couple of mistakes they made early on, but that's because they're walking a thin line of like, how much do we share? How much do we keep close? Do we want to give away this much information? So it's a difficult position that they find themselves in, number one, just to solve the case. But it's unrealistic that they're going to just catch the guy in 2 days and put him on trial. Like, you got to give them the time. And,
yeah,
you know, as much as you don't want to, you got to trust the process because it's out of your hands.
Yeah, it was, in this case, it was just the perfect storm of the audience wanted more. The police and the authorities weren't giving out information. And then the murder itself was just so bizarre, you know, like, how does someone come in, murder these four people, their roommate, in such a horrific way that, you know, in a horrific way, but yet the other people in the house didn't notice it. The following day, they were just out and about, like hanging out in front of the house, calling other college students over. These people are dead in a horrific way in the home. They finally called the police like hours later. So it was just so many question marks off the bat from just knowing the basis of what happened that it was just a perfect storm. And in a social media-led society, it was bound to just explode.
This documentary led to a conversation, and I think it was a very valuable documentary that was created. I'm glad, Pedro, you shared it with us because it's bringing to light that something that exists that some of us don't know. That's out there.
Yeah.
Okay. And we'll leave it there. Next week, I'm going to talk about Sopranos. We'll talk about Curb. We wanted to bring that up today, but there was no time. Maybe we'll catch up on True Detective. That should be wrapping up soon. And yeah, one or two surprises. So like, subscribe. We'll see you later. Peace.